Take two people curious about food, a restaurant chef and a writer and designer who can wield a camera, and a culinary agenda that takes them around the world. This is the perennialplate.com. Its creator is Daniel Klein. The videographer is Mira Fine. Hey, you two, it's great to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
You were recently in Mexico, so what did you discover?
We went to Chiapas, which is the southernmost state of Mexico, to a town called Tapachula. It's about 20 minutes from the Guatemala border, and most people only go there for a stopover before going to Guatemala.
Uh-huh.
And so people were surprised because they said, oh, you're going to Guatemala tomorrow? And we said, no, we're actually here to meet a woman who grows cacao.
Cocoa beans.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we never really know what to expect when we're meeting someone for the first time. And I remember being surprised when we opened the car door and saw this beautiful Mexican woman who was in her 70s. She had her hair all gray in one braid that went down past her waist, and this beautiful blue and green colored skirt down to her ankles, carrying this humongous machete. And took us into the jungle, which was where she'd been farming cacao for 50 years.
Tell me about her and tell me about what she did.
Well, the amazing thing is that, you know, we're walking around this jungle and there's all these trees. I didn't really realize what a cacao pod looked like. And all these pods are hanging off these trees. They kind of look like a super pregnant banana with a hard shell.
Uh-huh.
They're bright orange when they're ripe. They're green when they're not ripe. And they're brown when they're completely overripe. And so we're walking around, and with her machete, she would hit it on one of the pods and it would fall off and she could break it open, which is when we could see the actual cacao beans covered in like a fleshy pulp, which was the fruit, which was amazing.
I've heard it tastes fabulous. What does it taste like?
It tastes, well, it's like this fleshy, slippery
I think pulp. It tastes kind of like...
Sounds like a lychee nut or a...
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe a cross between a lychee and passion fruit.
Does anybody sell it?
They should, is what I'm thinking.
It's sort of astounding that cacao pods are only used for the chocolate, because it's like the most incredible thing you've ever had.
Yeah.
Which I think, even though it's not tasted directly, that sweetness and that deliciousness must enter into the chocolate. And that's part of the reason why you get, with really good chocolate, fruity flavors, because
there is that.
And the woman who took us around the farm, she actually said it's not just that fruit that contributes to the fruity flavor of the chocolate, but also the trees that surround it. So it's very important that you don't grow cacao in an open field. You need it to be surrounded by banana trees and orange trees and passion fruit and all these different wonderful things that she says contribute to the chocolate. And she actually thinks they're so important that she talks to her trees and shares with them how she's protecting them and loves them. It's very beautiful.
It is. Does she actually make the chocolate?
She does. That fruit around each cacao nib or nut, you let it ferment all together with the fruit in it for 4 days. And then you take it out and dry it, toast it, and then peel it.
So this woman makes her own chocolate, but she also sells her cacao to a cooperative.
Uh-huh.
And we went to that cooperative, and we saw how they traditionally toast the beans.
How do they do that?
They take it in a clay pot that's about 4 inches deep and quite like a couple feet wide, and start a fire.
Right.
And you move the beans constantly. You can't let them sit because you need even toasting throughout.
Yes, yeah.
And so moving quickly, very smoky. And then they start to pop like popcorn. You get this popping sound. And so that happens more and more until, and when it begins to stop, then the cacao is finished. By then you'll smell a little bit of what smells maybe like chocolate.
Uh-huh.
Starts to smell delicious. You take it off and then they're ready to crack open. And inside the bean are the nibs, and the nibs are the beautiful thing that you want to eat and that makes chocolate.
Ah.
So we sat around with this woman on her table in her backyard in the shade and spent a couple hours cracking open these cacao beans and chatting. And they don't really do that very often in that way.
Right.
There's machines that do it, but you could see the sort of community that develops from sitting around. And then, of course, you get to eat them. And we particularly ate the blonde nibs. Like 1 in 20 or 1 in 100 of the cacao beans has a blonde chocolate in it.
Oh, my.
And that's a sweeter, milder flavor, a little more fruity than the regular cocoa nibs.
What does a chocolate nib taste like? Is it bitter? Is it?
It's very crunchy. It has that dark chocolate taste to it, where there's no sweetness, but there's a little bit of, you know, banana or a little bit of fruitiness to it on the back end.
Did you get a chance to taste the sort of final product, finished chocolate?
We did. We got a chance to taste a couple chocolates. We tasted the chocolate that they make down in Chiapas, which is a more granular drinking chocolate that
right.
you put with milk or water and you drink warm. And it sometimes has cinnamon in it or different spices, maybe chili. But we also went to Mexico City and tried the chocolate of this man, Hector, who runs a place called Casa Tropical. And he uses that chocolate from Chiapas, but makes a more refined version of it. He really has this passion for creating a new type of Mexican chocolate that is neither European nor the granular chocolate that's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to create something that tastes of Mexico. And he had this beautiful thing where he was talking about how people eat his chocolate and they feel something. And he says they feel it because chocolate has been in Mexican culture since the Mayans. It was used as money in the past. So it's something that's deeply embedded in the people and the history of Mexico. And that, he says, has power. And that you can feel in your blood as a Mexican that it's part of who you are.
I'd never argue with that. Mira, Daniel, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Together, Mira Fine and Daniel Klein are the perennialplate.com. Now, be sure to take a look at some of their videos. You can find them at splendidtable.org and cash in on some chocolate with our recipe for little French fudge cakes. That's at splendidtable.org, too.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.